Chapter 9 adds a further reason for them to respond favourably. Paul, you'd think he'd finished there. He's made his point about the collection, but he's still a bit anxious about it. So he kind of goes on because another thought occurs to him. That's how I interpret it. He doesn't want to embarrass them in front of the Macedonians who are coming ahead, going ahead to organise the collection and who will come with Paul. Because of what Paul has already said before he heard that the Corinthians had discontinued the collection, he's been very proud of the Corinthians. He's told the Macedonians how well they're doing. Now he hears, or in the meantime, they've actually stopped and they're very hesitant about it. And Paul's embarrassed by that and also doesn't want to embarrass them. So he's wanting them to get the collection organised so that when he arrives, the Macedonians with him will say, oh, isn't this wonderful? It's true that they're generous people and so on. So chapter 9, I can just read it pretty straight through now with you. It's not necessary for me to write you about the ministry to the saints, for I know your eagerness, which is the subject of my boasting about you to the people of Macedonia, saying that Achaia has been ready since last year, and your zeal has stirred most of them up. But I'm sending the brothers in order that our boasting about you may not prove to have been empty in this case, so that you may be ready as I said you would be. Otherwise, if some Macedonians come with me and find that you're not ready, we'd be humiliated, to say nothing of you, in this undertaking. So I thought it necessary to urge the brothers to go on ahead to you and arrange in advance for this bountiful gift that you've promised, so that it may be ready as a voluntary gift and not as an extortion. The point is this: the one who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. An allusion to Proverbs 11:24. And the one who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each of you must give as you've made up your mind, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. That's also an allusion to Proverbs 22:8. And God is able to provide you with every blessing in abundance, so that by always having enough of everything, you may share abundantly in every good work. As it is written, now Psalm 112, verse 9, he scatters abroad, he gives to the poor, his righteousness endures forever. God will be generous with them if they are generous with their poor brothers, Jewish brothers, in Jerusalem. Verse 10, he who supplies seed for the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. You're enriched in every way for your great generosity, which will produce thanksgiving to God through us. For the rendering of this ministry, this diakonia, this divinely intended love-giving, which they are going to be instruments of God to the community in Jerusalem, the rendering of this ministry not only supplies the needs of the saints, but also overflows with many thanksgivings to God. Through the testing of this ministry, you glorify God by your obedience to the confession of the gospel of Christ, and by the generosity of your sharing with them and with all others, while they long for you and pray for you because of the surpassing grace of God that he has given you. Thanks be to God for this indescribable gift. And that brings us to the conclusion of chapter 9. Those first 9 chapters of 2 Corinthians, there are authors, as I think I mentioned earlier, There are authors who find it a bit illogical, a little bit here, a little bit there, and some authors see the need to divide it up and suggest that it's actually a compilation of a number of letters, including perhaps parts of the two letters that we know Paul has written but which seem to have lost. They suggest that when the Corinthian correspondence was gathered together later, the first letter stands and the second letter is really bits and pieces of two or three or four letters. All I can say is that having looked into the matter as best I'm able, I see no persuasive reason to divide chapter 1 through chapter 9. I think they hold together as a letter in their own right. However, we're now going to move on to chapter 10, 11, 12 and 13, which I'll be doing with you in our following lecture. I've offered you a sheet of paper there that you can look at. I intend to just look at that now as a preparation for next week, because I'm arguing here for the fact that while I'm not persuaded by the arguments that people give that chapters 1 to 9 need dividing up, and while it's obvious that chapter 10 to 13 is a unit, I don't think that chapter 10 to 13 could possibly be part of the same letter as chapter 1 to 9. Furthermore, I think there's elements of evidence, though not all scholars agree, that chapter 10 to 13 is written after chapter 1 to 9. I suggest it was the following year when Titus went down now, as we've just said, with the two brothers to organise the collection. In the meantime, another group of people have come, perhaps from Jerusalem itself, troubling Paul, and there's been a turn and a disappointment and a whole change of mood. And Paul, possibly from Western Macedonia the following year, 56, while he's working his way into the southern part of Illyricum, maybe then Titus catches up with him and Paul rushes off this postscript with a whole new mood and concern